Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I have bad news for you. Morph is dead. He's been beheaded. May he rest in peace. And his arms come off. Look at that. Oh, dear. What a disaster. Hello, welcome to another episode of Rahalastapa with this week with the fantastic Nathan Caton. We're recording these remotely still on Wednesday nights at twitch.tv/rkherring. You can tune in for free and watch them happening live. Now about 4 weeks behind. So if you want to get ahead of the cool crowd, watch them in advance for free. We're also doing lots of other stuff on that Twitch channel. Thursday nights is Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun featuring Brian the Dead Wasp. There he is. What's the buzz with Brian Wasp and also Chicky Chick? There's all sorts. Oh dear, what's happened to me? I'm like Michael Bentine's Potty Time off acid. That's what I'm like. Seem to have lost Donkey. I hope the Donkey turns up. He's had a good knock. Anyway, yes, you can watch that. There's also snooker and various other ideas for stuff, so just tune in. Why not go there and follow, and then you get notifications when we're live. Remember, you can subscribe. You can subscribe with money, but preferably use your Amazon Prime account and link them, and then you can give us £5 every month. Don't forget to resubscribe every month, and that money costs you nothing. It doesn't cost you anything extra. It's part of your Amazon Prime package if you have that. Remember, my book, The Problem with Men, is out in November. You can pre-order now. The audio book is also available for pre-order, which will be the book, and also a podcast with me and a very special guest. Probably some other extras in there as well. The more you can pre-order those things, the better it is for me. And shortly we'll be starting some Kickstarter campaigns for the snooker and the stone clearing, which you can get involved with if you are a fan of those particular endeavours. Anyway, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy. I'm on Taskmaster as well. Can you believe I haven't mentioned that? Taskmaster Series 10 out in October. Let's sit back, relax, enjoy Rahalastapa with Nathan Caton. Hello, show, please welcome a man who's just had his tarot cards read. It's Richard Herring. Hello! It's good to be here. I'm very hot as well. Look at this, I'm sweating. It's the hottest day of the year, and it's hot up in my little attic up in Hertfordshire. Welcome to Richard Herring's locally sourced twattery podcast. I was hanging around with the rhinoceroses at Whipsnade Zoo yesterday, and that is a cool out. I don't know if I've ever seen a rhinoceros up close before, but it is the coolest animal I think I've ever seen. It looks like a sort of animatronic version of a dinosaur that hasn't quite been invented. It does not look real, unless they're all animatronic and then none of them are real. I don't know. But there was a big one and a little one. It was the cutest thing I've ever seen and endlessly fascinating. The coolest animal now, declared by me, and those rhinoceroses, they call it Rhelostopus. I don't know if that's going to catch on. You never know. It might do. I forgot to bring my kids' Father's Day cards up. I'll have to read it out of here. I was going to talk to you about that. I've had my tarot cards read today. It's for a thing I can't talk about yet. I did it remotely with a lovely lady who didn't tell me too much. She did say that in some ways my career was going round in circles, which I kind of wanted to go, yeah, but I'm literally doing that. In fact, I've just stopped doing that. She said, things are very busy at the moment. In about a month, everything's going to calm down a bit, which I don't know if I like that very much. She also said that I wasn't in my relationship with both feet, which I can't wait till my wife sees that. Because I'm going to be in an awful lot of trouble with her if she's magic and going to read the future. So it was interesting to do it as a skeptical person, but she was very nice and I liked her very much. It was Father's Day on Sunday, and it's the first Father's Day where my daughter has been able to actually write me a card. So it was a very nice thing. She did a card which she put together and had a sort of weird picture of me on the front that she made out of beads, and inside it said Daddy. It actually said Baddy, but I think it was a mistake. I know we have a lot of fun together. XXX Phoebe, that's what she put. And my wife had helped her with the spelling, but that was her own. That's what she'd come up with. I know we have a lot of fun together, Phoebe, which sort of made me well up a bit. And then it's the kind of sentence I've heard a lot from women in my life, and it's usually followed by a but. That's the problem. And I think maybe my daughter had a bit more to say, but her writing's so big that she ran out of room. So she just got to, I know we had a lot of fun together, but it's time to move on to someone who would be a better partner or dad in her case. So she gave me a little plastic leopard as well. My son made me a card as well. And although you wouldn't know it, he had to tell you what it was. He'd drawn a picture of it, me doing a poo on the front. That was, which to be fair, is my signature move. So that was very good. What else has been going on? I watched Gemini Man the other day, which I wouldn't recommend. Will Smith playing two versions of himself. I've given away this. I think it's obvious from the poster. It's him and then a clone of him. But if there was a clone of you, would it have the same skills as you? That is the question I would like to ask. And that might become a new question. Because he's a very good sharpshooter assassin. But would a clone, I think, isn't that partly to do with the way you're brought up and your upbringing? It's not just an innate thing that makes you. He had all the exact same stuff. I would have preferred to see a film where Will Smith and young Will Smith sort of fought a bit and then just started kissing and then started fucking each other. I think that would have been a better film. Is it cheating to have sex with a clone of yourself? I don't think it is. I don't think it is. It's just that it's an elaborate wank, as far as I'm concerned. The snooker this week has come to a conclusion. My snooker, very exciting. The Quantum Leap Me won. This won't make much sense unless you've been watching that on Twitch. There's lots of stuff on Twitch TV all the time. We're recording these every Wednesday night. Next week, Daniel Sloss. And 8 p.m. Wednesday, usually, twitch.tv/arcadeherring. If you're watching it now, you know that, right? Because you're here watching it. And you can, of course, combine your account with your Amazon Prime account and give us some free money if you want to, or become a monthly badger at gofasterstripe.com/badges. Or you can buy Emergency Questions books. There's also How Not to Grow Up books. I've just found a big pile of them and signed them and drawn cocks in them. And you can buy one of those from Go Faster Stripe as well. So if you want to give some money back for all this free entertainment through this difficult and weird time, we recorded a gig for the O2, which meant to be at the O2 this week, but we in the bar, admittedly, but it still would have counted. We did it at home with James Acaster. You people at home will already have heard and seen it. But you people watching Twitch who are still at home, admittedly. That will come up very soon if you're not with O2. So thank you very much to O2 for helping us out with that. Right, let's get on with the show. Will you please welcome my guest? He is probably best known for playing a compere in the television programme Casualty. That's where we've all seen him, and that's why we're here. I've just heard him gasp. He just remembered it, how good it was. Please welcome Nathan Caton, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is. It's Nathan Caton.
Oh, mate. God,
how are you doing?
I was fine until I remembered I didn't watch it.
Well, hell. I haven't. I must confess, I did not see that. What was there? Were you playing a cake? I'm sure lots. Casualties are a very popular program. A lot of people saw it, Nathan.
Oh man, that doesn't make me feel any better.
What did it involve? Was it a comedy compare?
No, it was like no. You know, like kids have those like video game exhibitions where they're playing video games against each other.
I
was a compere of that.
Okay.
Just walking around commentating on people's gameplay. Oh, it was so bad.
And then you slipped up on a video game controller and you had to go to Casualty.
No, that's the thing. Like, nothing even happened to me. I was perfectly fine. That's how shit the world was. I was in Casualty and I was fine. Someone else had I think a fit or something.
Okay.
Or a seizure or something. And I just had to be there. And then,
oh
my God. You know what? No, it's even worse. I had an audition, I think maybe a month or so ago, for McIntyre's Roadshow.
Right.
My agent at the time messed it up. And so he got me Casualty to say, well, here's the compromise.
It's like, wow.
You can't balance those two. McIntyre's Roadshow could have made my career. This is just going to just force me to drink. It was really.
Well, I mean, you've done a little bits of acting here and there. That's there's 4 or 5 IMDb acting jobs I could have picked out, but
really?
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's been a few little bits and pieces.
Little bits, still some sums.
So that, I mean, it's quite good to get into. And you know, so you might have got some work as a compere at a video game conference if someone had seen that. Go, that guy was good. He helped out the kid when he was having a fit or something. A fit or something he was having.
That guy was like unnecessarily loud. Let's get him in.
Well, let's look at some of the. The credit that is actually impresses me the most. So I couldn't use as my funny opener is that you have written an episode of Raster Mouse, which, with as a man with 2 children under 5, I'm quite impressed with.
Irie.
I don't know. I mean, can you? It's basically a crime fighting mouse who's in a crew of crime fighting mice. But when they finish crime fighting, they play in a reggae band together. Is that a fair summation of the?
The
situation.
Kind of maybe Danger Mouse, but for kids.
Yeah.
Set in like the West Indies.
Yeah. It's you know, it's good.
Yeah.
You know, I think as far as I can judge these things, it's kids' programs.
It's all about you know, peace and love and like if someone does something wrong, he's all about helping them get their life on track.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Which is nice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's not like nothing like too heavy.
How did you get involved with writing for Raster Mouse?
How did I?
How did that happen?
I don't know how. I think I just did yes and took the money. I did a pilot for Paramount Comedy, as it was back in the day, Comedy Central. And one of the producers on that was working on Raster Mouse already with the writers of Raster Mouse. And they needed extra writers. And because he knew that I did a lot of stuff about my grandma and my Western background, he was like, can you come and, you know, do this? And I was like, okay, cool. I'll do it. And next thing you know, I was writing one of the episodes. Like, yeah, cool.
It's good. I'm impressed. My kids like now, they like different things. Oddbods I'd be more impressed if you're writing for Oddbods.
What's Oddbods?
Well, man, it's how do you describe it?
It sounds, Oddbods sounds like, is it something like dodgy?
It isn't dodgy. They're sort of little, almost toys. I mean, there's obviously someone's got some idea of, they've got different, you know, like those funny hats you get at festivals. It's like their heads are like funny hats that you get at festivals, all different shapes, but they're like almost Teletubby but a bit less Teletubby than Teletubbies. It's hard to describe. It is quite funny. My father-in-law loves it. He's 70, and he laughs at it more than anyone else. So it appeals to kids and older people. I don't quite... My daughter's watching Teen Titans Go. I think you'd like Teen Titans Go. They do some turtle parody. They do some Ninja Turtles stuff in there.
Hello.
So it's quite knowing. It's quite knowing and quite clever. A bit too rude and for my five-year-old daughter, but she does like it a lot. Anyway, let's not talk.
Onboard sounds like what Naked Attraction should be called.
Right.
Have you ever seen Naked Attraction?
I've not watched an episode, but I'm aware of the... I've seen some clips.
Yes. Oh, mate. Who commissioned that? Who said, yeah, that's going to work?
It's very hard to get on TV these days, but, you know, someone's cock has been on TV more than you and I have put together properly. So there you go.
Mate, it changed my career, man.
So let's have a little... you're a West London boy, and I was until recently living in Shepherd's Bush. Hey. Wikipedia says you were born in Hammersmith, but that's not... You were Greenford, were you? Did you live in Hammersmith?
No. I was born in a hospital in Hammersmith, but I'm Greenford, raised, lived there all my life.
There's a citation needed on Wikipedia about your age and date of birth, by the way. That's quite an unusual thing, so I don't know how we can prove that. I often do this citation needed, and I've just sorted out. Is your birthday... Oh, I've got to take my glasses off. The 2nd of November, 1984.
It depends who's asking.
It does. I'm trying to get... If I'm going to ask your mum's maiden name and get a bit more details of you.
What's this on the back of your card?
It's up on... That's what it says, but it says citation needed. 35 citation needed.
Yeah, okay, that's correct.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, there's no need for a citation. Just link to this podcast and then we've
people
got there.
Find this stuff out, because I don't know how people find out these, I think my middle name is on the internet. And, right. How do people find that out?
Junior?
There's a stalker somewhere. Either that or my girlfriend is blabbing too much. How do people know all this stuff?
There's no citation needed on your, so that's been, they're happy with the proof of that. I mean, there's a lot of things they let go without putting citation needed, I have to say. But so you nearly studied architecture. That was what you were sort of heading towards? Studied engineering. You nearly were going to be an architect, I should say.
Yeah, basically,
you studied architecture.
I did the 3-year degree.
Right, cool.
And then I could have carried on to the extra 4 years to be a proper architect. Mm. But I thought, no, man, I want to scrape a living by telling jokes in shitty pubs.
I mean, architecture sounds like a cool thing to do, though. If you can do it, if you can...
You see that.
Make buildings.
You said that if you can do it. That's the key thing. That's if you can do it. I didn't say I was any good. I didn't say my grades are great.
No. And I guess they don't let you just go out of college, go and design this building here. I bet you have to do some toilets and stuff first here. You do the toilet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Design shed, we'll give you some Lego. All right. If you do go to Lego, it's just moving up. So I did the 3-year degree, and then by the time I finished my degree, I was already doing stand-up. I started stand-up when I was 19.
Yeah, and you'd done I heard talking on Stuart Goldsmith's excellent podcast, Comedian. So you'd done like a gig at like when you're about 14 or something like that, when you did it for your church group.
Yeah. It was a church talent show.
Right.
And some of the people in the youth group, they dared me to do stand-up because I was always making jokes like on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Like, all right, fine, I'll go and do something. And I didn't think anything of it. I thought it would be a laugh, make some jokes, make fun of some of the people in the church. Obviously, I had to keep it clean, right? Because I'll be in church going, hey, what's going on, motherfuckers? Yeah, cool. Mate, my family would be like... outcasted. So yeah, I kept it clean.
Yeah.
Did some jokes, making fun of people. And that was the first, when you come off stage and people are laughing and you get that buzz, as a comedian.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, that feels good. Oh, hello. And I kind of, that stuck with me for ages.
Yeah.
To the point when I was 19 at university, I was like, oh, I want to give comedy another go. When I'm still young, or when I've got nothing to lose, I'm going to do it. Because that buzz that I had when I was 14, I'll never forget it, man. I know it's like a drug, it's like a...
Yeah.
It's well, it's nearly as good as an orgasm, depending on how good your sex is.
Yeah. I mean, a bad orgasm. It's as good as a bad orgasm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I can have bad ones.
I nearly do. You know.
But that's quite a big decision to get, you know, like, I suppose people do get into comedy at 19, but to go into stand-up at 19 and to change course once you've sort of realised you like doing it, that's quite early to start. So,
because I was so young and I thought, you know what, I'll give it a go for a year or so, you know. It could be like a little hobby that I do. But I just evolved to the point where I was like, I'm going to stick at it for a little while.
Yeah.
And see how I get along. And 15 years later or so, I'm still...
I mean, it's crazy, but you've been going this such a long time. When you start that young, you're still a very young man. But, you know, you've done 15 years of stand-up.
I look young, but in my head, I'm like 67 years old. So much older than I actually am.
So I've got my windows open because it's so hot, and that means the motorbikes of Hertfordshire are going past and making a noise. I apologise if that's interrupting people's listening pleasure. Or, you know, it might be better. People might like to hear it. I love motorcycling myself. Anyway, let's talk about, because you wear a cross on stage quite a lot, and obviously you talk about your church group and stuff. So you are certainly, when the stuff I've been watching, you're a Christian, which is quite an unusual... I mean, not necessarily unusual to happen, but it's quite unusual for people to admit it in the comedy scene and talk about it on the comedy scene.
Yeah.
And to wear a cross on stage, you know, to sort of say, this is who I am.
Yeah, I mean, because it's so... I don't know, it feels like kind of taboo to be like, I'm a man of faith. Whereas, because in comedies... The joke is that always, you know, God doesn't exist, and grow up.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah,
like, I hate those, you know, guys, like, doing that. Like,
I could say that I am an axe murderer. I support cannibalism, and that would be more supported than saying I'm a man of faith. Because it's just frowned upon. Well, not frowned upon, but it's just rare.
Yeah. It is a rare thing. But it's, you know, but then it's good to own it, and it's good to be who you are, which I think you seem to have. You've grasped that very early on, I think. It's your comedy seems, you know, but your comedy is, it comes from a nice place, I think, as well. You know, there's a Christian sensibility behind it, as well as it being,
that's not Christian. You know, I'm just going to be scared that my grandma or my mum will be in the audience and slap the shit out of me if I'm realizing it.
But there's that family thing as well. So you're big into talking about your family, which is nice as well. It's not that. You know, a lot of comedians want to be the cool renegade. I'm anti everything, and you seem to be very reasonable as well in kind of balancing.
Yeah,
you talk about political issues, but you're very balanced in that rather than.
I'm not like a harsh bad boy shouty kind of guy. No, I mean, I've got my opinions and I'll deliver it to you, but I'll gently spoon feed you. You don't want another bite? Are you full? Okay, no, you want more? Have another one. There you go. I mean, I'm a big softie. That's who I am, which I have come to accept and acknowledge. I say it on stage, you know, like, I can't fight, but one thing I can do is I can tell my mum and she'll fuck you up instead. So that's who I am, you know. I know my lane. I'm going to stay in that lane, man.
So were your family supportive of this decision to kind of give up your studies, to give up what you'd studied for and become a comedian and go into that world, which seems, you know... Some more distance away from their life.
They were so supportive. They absolutely loved the fact that me, the first one in the family to go to university, was going to turn down this degree that cost so much money. Shitty rooms above pubs. they were skeptical. They didn't think I was that funny. which is a very, very damning indictment from your own flesh and blood. I told my mum that I was going to do stand-up. I remember we were out at a restaurant, and her first reaction was, well, how are you going to pay the rent? And I was like, well, you know, I can get paid from gigs. And she's like, how are you going to pay the rent? It was actually trying to reinforce, you're not funny enough to make money from this. How are you going to pay the rent? My grandma just thought it was a hobby. She's like, because she's from an older generation where, to her, a job is like, you know, using your hands, or like you're in an office. It's not on stage for a mic. That's not a job. That's just something you do in your spare time for fun. So she didn't get that. They were just baffled and like puzzled as to why I would walk away from a profession, a solid profession as well.
Yeah.
Like architecture, to just tell jokes, you know, I remember telling my grandma, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a comedian. She's like, go on then, tell me a joke. You're not funny, boy. it was a curveball to them.
Sure. Yeah. And are they supportive now? Or have you done well enough to please them?
Yeah. After Live at the Apollo, they were very supportive.
Okay.
That's my son. No joke. He's so funny. Over the years, they've come to realize that actually I can do something. I can make a living from this. So now they're cool. Like, first time I did Live at the Apollo, my mum came down. I think that was one of the first times she'd seen me. My mum, my brother, and my girlfriend, maybe my stepdad. But after that set, my mum, my brother, they were like, you're really funny.
Yeah.
I mean, part of me was like, oh, thank you, acceptance. But another part of me was like, what, you sound surprised. Like, you thought I'd go there and die and get, like, I was shit all these years. And it's going, I don't know, I was going to follow, this is going to be bad. But yeah, now they're cool. Now they're like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
You do your thing.
You do quite a lot about your mum. I didn't see this show. Again, I heard you talking to Stuart about it, the Teenage Mutant Nathan Caton.
Yes.
Which was about, obviously, your childhood, but about your mum and your mum getting remarried.
Yeah.
But it was quite a personal show, like quite a serious show about your feelings about that.
It was probably the most emotional show I've ever done.
Yeah.
I'm not an emotional person, like, because I'm a comedian and I'm a bloke, so emotion, just put it down. Don't talk about it. My normal response or reaction to anything serious is just to kind of be sarcastic, have a laugh, and try and get out of the conversation. But on this occasion, I was like, I'm gonna switch up. I'm gonna just talk about how I feel and how I felt, and. The show was about, so my mom's getting remarried, and she chose her brother from Canada to walk her down the aisle. And it was all about my reaction to that and how I felt like ostracized and left out because I was the obvious candidate. Because my granddad, her dad passed away when I was a kid. So it was either going to be me or my little brother. And because I'm the eldest, I thought, well, obviously she's going to choose me. I'm the leading man in her life. Basically, I'm just a comedian who's got Oedipus complex, basically.
Yeah.
I just kind of went into like, the emotion of and why I was so protective of my mum, given everything that we've been through in our past and stuff, me and my mum and my little brother. It was an open show. Right? I mean, to some of the reviewers in Edinburgh thought it was too emotional.
Oh, that can't be put in Edinburgh. That's not possible. But I'm kind of interested in. I'm interested. So had you talked to your mum about the stuff you were talking about in the show? I mean, your mum hadn't seen the show, I don't think. Did you tell your mum that you were upset about not being asked to?
I told her that I felt like I should have done it, but I didn't say it in a serious way. I said it in a very kind of joke way. It's like, come on, how are you gonna leave me hanging like this? And she's like, no, no. Like, instead, she got me to MC the reception.
Like, right.
Yeah, because, you know, standing in front of people with a microphone, like, I don't do that in fucking rest of my life. I didn't even get paid as well. The cheap bitch. No, really. I just joked about it.
Yeah.
When I did the show, that's when it all came out. And one of her friends from work was in Edinburgh and saw the show and then reported back to my mum. And she's like, oh, you felt that way? I was like, yeah. My mum hasn't seen the show because I haven't done the show since because I don't want my mum to see it. Because, I don't know, I just feel like we'll either both start crying or she'll have slapped the shit out of me. So I was like, I'm not going to do it again. Because the first time I did that, I did a preview of that show, I started crying on stage.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realize I tapped into an emotion that I didn't realize.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it all just came out. And it was like, yeah.
I think that's interesting because I did a show about my dad, which is called The Headmaster's Son, it was just about him. My dad was my headmaster in my school.
Oh, wow.
Which is a bit, and I always said how weird it was for me. And when I did that show, and my dad was in the audience a couple of times, and then just at the end of the show, I kind of suddenly realized, even at 35 or whatever I was at the time, that I'd never thought of it from his point of view, right? I'd always thought, oh, it's awful being the headmaster's son, but I'd never thought how weird it was being the father of a pupil at your school. Yeah, yeah. And when he was in the audience, I absolutely had the same thing where I couldn't actually get through that bit. And even though I thought, it's great for the show in a way, but every time I was going, right, no, I'm going to get through it. But every time I didn't get through it. So I sort of just find it interesting. And you say you're a man and you push down your feelings and you don't discuss stuff. But obviously, as a comedian, I think, comedians talk about everything. I think, and we talk about stuff way more than that male stereotype, at least. Yeah. Anyway, and so if you're, that you've talked very, you've talked about subjects I think a lot of men would feel they didn't want to talk about in the pub. There's a great thing on your Twitter feed about you going to a gay bar and even though you're not gay, enjoying the attention you're getting from the gay guys there, which is a beautiful thing. But so a lot of men wouldn't talk about that, in their daily life. But as a comedian, you do end up expressing yourself, right?
On stage,
yeah,
I can talk about anything. Anything serious that I can spin it into some sort of material, and I feel comfortable. But off stage, like talking about something serious, like my girlfriend or my mum or whatever, and I don't know, I freeze. I don't know how to just open up like that. But you're on stage to strangers easily.
Yeah. Like, I think I just think that's sort of interesting that you can get all of that show out to an audience of strangers. It just says a lot about the comedy brain and the way a comedian works that
we're just messed up
that you can do that. But it's messed up, but it's sort of cool and it's sort of interesting, but mainly messed up. Let's talk a bit about we're in lockdown still. People at home listening to the podcast are probably in the second lockdown with a lot more deaths happening. That's my prediction. I hope I'm right, because it'd be embarrassing if I'm wrong. How's it been? You're that straight down the line kind of clubbing comedian. I mean, you do other jobs as well. You do other work as well, but you're working six or seven nights a week in clubs, right?
It's good.
So suddenly, how is it to suddenly have that rug pulled out from under your feet and
massive
suddenly have no
gear
work?
Change. Massive gear change, gigging six, seven nights a week, doing multiple gigs in the night, some nights.
Yeah.
Now I'm just sitting here doing nothing, just drinking alcohol. What's I do, man? Like rum punch. That's my microphone.
Yeah.
Drinking alcohol, playing FIFA, actually talking to my girlfriend. It's like,
wow.
That's what you sound like. Wow, man. that's fun. I mean, I love my girlfriend, but it's kind of.
Is it difficult for her? That's the thing. It just changes that lifestyle where you're always out in the evening.
Yeah.
She may have got used to that and enjoy that. And then suddenly you're kicking around every night.
The thing is, she only moved in. she moved in with me October.
Oh, really? Right.
So it's kind of gone from I was living by myself for a few years, enjoying it. Then she moved in. I was like, okay. And now she's here all the time, fuck my life. I did not think, if I knew this was coming, I would have asked her to move in next year. So I said I can have this whole lockdown by myself chilling. it's hard for her as well, because she's got a proper day job. She's a teacher, so during the day she'd be out of the house to myself chilling. It's my time. Then when she comes in, I'm going out. So then she gets the evening, her time. So we both had this lovely balance where we maybe see each other for half an hour in a day, but that was enough. We just walk past and go, hey, what's up? Yeah, cool. What's up? And then we just enjoy each other's space and stuff. But now we're just together all the time. And, can I share something with you?
Yeah.
I wrote a poem based on being a lockdown with my girlfriend. Can I read it out to you?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Please do.
Cool. This poem, where's it gone? Oh, here we go. All right. See, I mean, probably a lot of couples can relate to this, right? it's cool. So, my bad. This poem that I wrote from Best of My Girlfriend is called I Love You, But Can You Just Fuck Off Now, Please? Okay. It's I've never done poetry before, but I just thought, you know, I felt inspired, so I wrote it. Okay. It's poem. Because of this. It's not that I don't love you. It's not that I don't care. It's just that everywhere I go, everywhere I turn, you're always fucking there. When I go to get some food, when I choose to have a sit, there you are, right on top of me, like a fly on a piece of shit. You're amazing. You still make me weak at the knees. I love you, but can you just fuck off now, please? Second verse. It's not that I'm not there for you, now and forever, but I will stab you in the face with a fucking fork if we have to spend any more time together. Morning, noon, and night, every hour that God has sent, yet you still ask me, how was your day, babes? You know how the fuck it went. Look, I'm crazy about you, more than you can believe. I love you, but can you just fuck off now, please? Yes, we get on. The sex is amazing, and we have a laugh. But when I see you at home during the day, I think, why can't you be frontline staff? A doctor or a nurse or in a supermarket packing a shelf. Something that gets you away from me so I can have the house all to myself. Yes, we're in a relationship, but no, we're not fucking Siamese. I love you, but can you just fuck off now, please? Last verse.
Okay.
Before the lockdown, I used to look at you and think, I'm so lucky, I don't deserve her. But now I look at you and I think, I'm going to do time for murder. Go for a walk, get some exercise, take a stroll around the block. Take your time though, don't rush back. Enough time for me to change the locks. Since we've been at home together, it's like pissing me off has become your expertise. I love you, but can you just fuck off now, please?
It's beautiful.
From the heart, mate. From the heart.
It's really... I thought it might turn around in a John Donne-esque way and you know, like the... And reveal your true love for her. I mean, not that that wasn't there all through, but no, I'm glad it just carried on. I'm fine. It's better it just carried on. Got worse and worse. How are you feeling as a comedian without that outlet to perform? So my wife was kind of obsessed with that idea that, that if I ever get stopped doing gigs, I was... what's happening here? I've got something coming off my screen. Hopefully Chris Evans is watching. I think I've been signed out of Zoom, but hopefully it's all good. oh, okay. It's turned into you. It's fine. It's just a technical thing at this end. My wife's kind of obsessed with the idea that if I don't gig for a while, I become a sort of miserable cunt. And then I go and gig again and everything's fine again. Have you missed that? You know, I think there's, Sarah Millican was talking about this, you know, the adrenaline is actually a drug and yeah. To not get that adrenaline. A few weeks in, you could sort of get properly depressed. Have you found that, or have you managed to find an outlet to get that?
Well, the poem was a good one. But I totally get it. Yeah. There have been days when I've been miserable, and I've just been like, I said to my girlfriend, just leave me alone. I just need to be on myself. And just like, sure. I don't know, just kind of get my head around the fact that this is life for now. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not been able to go out and just like, I mean, I've always loved stand up, but in lockdown, I've realized how much I really love it, like really cherish what I do for a living. Be able to go out on stage and just make people laugh, make people happy for like 20 minutes, half an hour or so. And now I can't do that, you know, like I tell jokes to my girlfriend, but she doesn't appreciate it. It's like, you're a shit crowd. Yeah, it is. I said it's a gear change. It is
really
frustrating. I mean, when the world opens up and we're allowed back out, there's a backlog of stuff, mate. Audiences are going to have to just sit there and take it. I've got so much to say.
Yeah, but you know, when will it be? You know, they've announced as we're doing this. You know, the bingo halls are allowed to open. The cinemas are allowed to open. I don't quite get, you know, why. A cinema can be a funny film. They can show a funny film, but a comedian can't. If it's anything to do with people laughing and I know funny films aren't as funny as comedians, but if it's about spreading germs, it's sort of, you know, I just don't know when we're going to get back. into being able to do live stuff. And then, you know, if you've been making, I mean, I presume you make most of your living from, from stand up.
On the clubs,
Yeah. So how, you know, how are you, are you going to be able to cope for another, if it's 6 months, if it's another 7-8 months, are you going to be able to get through that period of time?
I've already started looking at like prostituting myself. My girl wasn't happy about it, but I was like, babes, I've got enough love to go around, baby. No worry.
You're lucky. You're very good looking, so that will can work out for you. But look, I mean, this raddled old
mate,
this corpse. I can't do anything.
There's something for everyone, mate. Don't put
yourself... Someone wants this. Someone out there. Someone is prepared to pay for this. But,
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Oh, God. Well, look, let's, I'll ask you a couple of emergency questions and we'll get on to even more serious topics that I want to talk to you about. Let me ask you some of my new emergency questions. Okay. If you, if all the art galleries and museums in the world got together and said you are allowed, Nathan Caton is allowed to take one item, a painting, a historical artifact, anything from any museum or art gallery in the world, is there something you would like to possess if they allowed you to take it? Is there anything that would take your fancy? Any painting or, you know, anything in a museum, anything in an art gallery. It doesn't have to be art. It can be an historical artifact or just something you fancy.
Oh, gosh.
And it's quite, it's a big question.
Yeah. I would.
Do you ever go to music? Do you go to museums much? I see that's how I pass my time on tour, sometimes going to crazy museums and stuff and seeing. I mean, you could just get something valuable and sell it.
I might just go to like the Natural History Museum.
Yeah.
Just take anything because it's not British. It's stolen anyway. Like, now you know how it feels. Just take something. Anything.
Yeah. British. The Elgin marbles, yeah, could be given back. You can give them back. I mean, you can take them and give them back. That's definitely allowed. And who is the most famous person you've ever been in a lift with that you didn't get in the lift with, that you weren't with when you got in the lift? Have you ever been in a lift with a famous person?
Oh, gosh.
You must have been. Come on, Nathan.
In a lift with a famous person?
Come on.
Have I?
You must have been.
Mate, you are very overestimating my lifestyle, mate.
Just by, like, down the Westfield, someone you must have been. I met Shane Ritchie at the Westfield. That's the kind of thing that can happen.
Oh, I know.
I can't
go to Westfield. There's too many people. I just end up, like, just accidentally keeping someone in the back of the head. Have I been in a lift of someone famous? Lee Ryan from Blue.
Have you?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good one.
Is that good?
Yeah, no, I'm very impressed with that. That's a good choice. What was he like? Did anything happen with Lee Ryan when he was in the lift?
He's a bit of a geezer, mate. He's down to earth. Yeah, he's like, I don't know. For some reason, I always think singers would be like divas, but he's like, nah, you're like, mate, how you doing? He's like, dude, mate, you know you're a singer, man. Be a diva. Like, tell him to shut up or something. Just look at me and go, no pictures. But no, he was a cool guy. Really laid back.
Good. Well, it's good to know. That's how we find out. We found out a lot about celebrities in the lift. So, look, one of the things I want to talk to you about was you recently tweeted something that I thought was great, which, again, with everything that's going on in the world, is incredibly relevant. Where I think it's this, like, it's about this idea of privilege, right? And what really struck this of me about this is that you and I have the same job, and should have the same basic lifestyle as a result. You would hope,
yeah.
You know, that's one of the things I like about comedy is it's sort of, and I know it isn't quite, but it feels like it's a level playing field that anyone, if you're funny, anyone can go in, if you can go in a club and do it.
Yeah.
And if you're funny, you should be successful, therefore, because, you know, it's about talent, the talent to make people laugh. You'd got this, I don't know where you got it from, but there was someone asking questions, just basic questions about life, like, you know, when you go into a shop, have you ever been, you know, someone followed you around thinking you're stealing stuff? If you walk down the street, people cross the road, and you've got to hold up your ten fingers, you hold up, and you've got to put a finger down every time that thing has happened to you. Like, I maybe put half a finger down.
Wow.
Seriously.
Really?
You yeah. I mean, like, mate, I think maybe there's been and I can't even think of a specific example. Maybe someone's crossed the street because they've been worried it's late at night. Someone might have crossed the street to get because I was walking behind them. I'm not a very threatening looking guy, I have to say. So it was if it happened, it was a very weak person.
Yeah, all they have to turn around and go, oh, it's okay.
But you put, there was about 12, 13 questions. Yeah. We might slice this in for people to see into the podcast.
Check your privilege edition. Put a finger down if you have been called a racial slur. Put a finger down if you've been followed in a store unnecessarily. Put a finger down if someone has crossed the street to avoid passing you. Put a finger down if you've had someone clench their purse in an elevator with you. Put a finger down if you've had someone step off of an elevator to keep from riding with you. Put a finger down if you've been accused of not being able to afford something expensive. Put a finger down if you have had fear in your heart when being stopped by the police. Put a finger down if you have never been given a pass on a citation that you deserved. Put a finger down if you have been stopped or detained by police for no valid reason. Put a finger down if you have been bullied solely because of your race. Put a finger down if you have been denied service solely because of the color of your skin. Put a finger down if you've ever had to teach your child how not to get killed by the police. Any fingers left? That's privilege.
Basically, you put down every question. Basically, was you put your finger down, apart from one that you didn't understand what the question was.
That's just
astonishing to me. So I think it's so powerful about privilege and about how people don't get that about the, you know, when it's all this. I mean, you know, again, I saw you tweeting about this, but Black Lives Matter. I mean, you know, it was bad enough people saying all lives matter. Just this week, we've had people flying planes saying white lives matter, yeah, which is a kind of massive misunderstanding of what this is. But I guess white people don't get the innate privilege of what the way their lives are.
Well, first of all, it's not all white people.
No.
Let's not make a general sweeping assumption. It's a small minority of people who I think maybe if it was not called Black Lives Matter and called Black Lives Matter as well, then maybe they'd get it. But I don't know if they just don't get it or just don't want to get it.
They don't. Look, it's the same. You know, I do this thing on, I mean, I'm writing about this for a book I'm writing. I do on International Men's Day, International Women's Day, men go, when's International Men's Day? And there is already an International Men's Day they don't realize. And, you know, I tell them when it is. But it's that implication that if there's a day for something or a movement for something, that means it's against the opposite of that. But you only think that if you're already, even if you don't know it, if you're already prejudiced, because it's not, you know, Black Lives Matter isn't saying and white lives don't matter.
Yeah, I know.
It's saying, you know, white people aren't going to get, you know, shot by the police or kneeled on their necks till they're dead for 8 minutes, you know. So it's,
well, it's kind of like on Black Friday, going into a shop that's busy with people and go, guys, calm down. All Fridays are important. It's like, no, you're missing the context, okay? Like, Black Lives Matter, it's not saying only Black Lives Matter. It's not saying black people Black lives are more superior. It's not like, well, my support for it is not based on superiority. It's just based on equality and fairness and
of course.
Peace and love and harmony.
Yeah.
But still, like, even like today, on Facebook and Twitter, I've got people like tweeting me and commenting on my posts and saying, you know, you're a hypocrite. You've been racist. Like, no, you don't get that. Like, okay. It's like, I said this to one guy. It's like me, like a heterosexual man, going to gay pride, going, straight lives. What about straight lives? Like, yeah. I'll look like an imbecile. Like, how I'm missing the point. I'm being a dickhead. It's like, you're missing the context here. Okay. Like, I'm not trying to, you know, say that black people should be put on a pedestal. No. It's like, I just want us to be all equal. But yeah. It's just staggering how, like, people just don't get it.
I think it's because, I mean, I've been thinking about it a lot, not just the race thing and the sexual equality, equality of, you know, all the types of equality. And I think people are threatened when you see the guys who went to the, whatever the fuck the protest against, the Winston Churchill thing. Those guys were just angry. And they didn't know what it was about, you know. I mean, they didn't know what they were angry about, to the point they could piss on the. They thought they had flex statues, and one of them could piss on the memorial to the policeman who got killed by terrorists, you know, which presumably would be the antithesis of everything that they would think. But, you know, they're lashing out at police. They're just angry, and I think because they feel lost, and I think they feel they don't know where they're going in life, and they feel that things are against them, but. I think what those guys don't realize is that their enemies are exactly the same enemies as the people who are fighting for equality.
Also, I don't think they realize what irony is, because there was the guy who was protecting a statue of Churchill by doing a Nazi salute next to it. It's like, mate, that's like black people protecting a statue of Martin Luther King by covering it in a white hood. Like, what are you doing? Think about what you're doing. There's no need for you to be angry. We're not saying that you're not important. Obviously, you're important, okay? All lives matter, yes.
Yeah.
But black lives have to matter for all lives to matter. You get what I mean? But, yeah, that's just, I don't know. It's like banging your head against the wall sometimes, going, God.
What I think is hopeful, I hope, is that, you know, well, I've been around a bit longer than you, and I've been in this country since, you know, through the 70s, which you missed, which you were lucky to miss the 70s, where, you know, where things were, I think, were definitely worse than they are now. I think we sort of, it's ebbed and flowed, and I think, you know, I think, like, I'm probably guilty of this. I thought we hit this century and thought, this stuff's all sorted out. We're there, we've got it, and, you know, that was definitely wrong, right? But in the 70s, the casual racism on TV, the sort of stuff you'd see on TV was just appalling, really, really bad. And so, like, things that have improved. And I think when you look at the thing I was going to say, when you look at that Burnley fucking plane going through White Lives Matter Burnley, the immediate response of the club, of all the players, the captain of that team was, this is embarrassing, this is ridiculous, this is awful. And I kind of just hope that if those guys are saying that, you know, if that's the immediate response, which again in the 70s that wouldn't have been the immediate response, you know, that it would have been, yeah, you know, the history of this is long and complicated and awful, and obviously the 60s we saw, like, all the stuff you're talking about, Martin Luther King and all that going on, so it was happening. But I think in Britain in the 70s, you know, most people would have been just out and out racist. And I think now, I don't know, I hope, but what, you know, this is my fucking experience, which is not, as your video really shows, is not the real experience.
Media, mate.
Yeah. But my experience isn't the real experience, and your experience is the genuine experience. Have you found any difference since Brexit in terms of, you know, of some of the black and Asian comedians I've spoken to, you know, noticed a shift after Brexit in terms of audiences towards them?
I feel like, well, from my perspective, what I see, I feel like since Brexit, a lot of, like, discriminatory comments or discriminatory actions, it feels like it's been more accepting now. It's like now they've got, like, a bit of a platform now.
Yeah, yeah.
Not saying that Brexit supporters are racist. I'm not saying that, obviously. people have voted for Brexit for their own personal reasons, but some people, it has been a chance for them to air out some of these views, which are like, whoa, mate, what year are you living in, man? At the gigs, it's nothing like directly towards me per se, but I've just noticed in general, I just maybe out in the public as well, there's a bit more confidence to say things which they wouldn't have said maybe 5-10 years ago.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I just hope it's as things weaken, they sort of get more angry and more, you know, and louder. You know what I mean? I hope it's that. I mean, I really hope it's that, but it's, you know, and I hope what's happening at the moment is a sort of sea change, but it's, you know, I think as a comedian, you're really interesting, right? Because I look at you and I go like, oh, for the last 20 years, TV's been going, we want more black comedians, we want more diversity, we want this, we want that. You are a very marketable black comedian, I would say, in that you are, you know, well, you know, but you are everything that you would think, like, say, Saturday Night, and, you know, Michael McIntyre, exactly that thing. You would think, this is a guy who's doing family-friendly material mostly, is doing, you know, is very good at his job. He, you know, he has that, if you're looking in a box ticking, he's got that box ticking thing. And yet you have not, you know, I was talking to Katie, my wife, about this, and she was saying, you know, Richard, the thing is, everything, they're all racist, all these, they're just racist, because you are the, you know, if you've been working for 15 years as a stand-up, and, you know, you've had radio shows, and you've been on some panel shows and some TV shows, but there's, you know, that big break has not yet come for you. I think that's fair to say. Yeah. It's been close,
yeah,
but it hasn't happened.
No.
And I think Katie's saying, you know, it's the system's racist.
It's easy to say that, but
yeah.
I would always take responsibility myself and be like, okay, what can I do? What else can I do to get to where I want to be? So I'm just, all I can do is just do me, just do what I do. And hope that, you know, someone sees it and goes, yeah, let's give him a go. You know, see what happens, man. That's what my agent says to me. Just keep plugging away. Just keep doing it, man. Keep doing it. People will see that you're funny. Just keep plugging away. And yeah, whatever happens, happens, isn't it?
It is, but it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's not, you know, there aren't.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I totally get what you're saying. I mean, it is very outrageous, too much of a statement to say that, like, Lenny Henry is still the biggest black name in comedy.
Yeah.
When there's a lot of good black talent out there.
Sure.
I
mean, that's the thing, there's a lot, you know, and I would accept it if it was, you know, because we all understand how it works, and like there's good comedians who don't get that break, there's good comedians who go and do their own thing and whatever. Mm. But you know, you just suddenly go, well, like, I mean, again, I hope it's going to change. You know, everyone's saying, oh, it's all going to, you know, everything's going to change now. But it just feels weird to me, and I'm sure it feels weird to you, and you're being very diplomatic, and I appreciate it. But, you know, if there's anyone watching who's in control of TV, I would have to tell them that, you know, I just think what the stuff you're doing is that I would say just perfect prime time, you know, that Saturday night stuff, and you could be there and you could be doing that, and you know that isn't necessarily true of a lot of comics. That's a very specific thing that certain comics can do.
Can you?
And it's not good for me. I couldn't.
Can you represent me, please, mate?
I will. I'm going to represent you.
But no, I get what you mean. I mean, like, yeah. A sitcom, for example. Okay, so Dane Baptiste, very good comedian, mate of mine, had a sitcom, BBC3. But before him, there wasn't, I think Desmond's would have been the last black sitcom. And that was in early 90s, sorry. That was early 90s. So, I mean, it says a lot that there's been a vacuum, a void, right? Not saying that we should be put on just based on the color of our skin. Obviously, we've got to be good as well. But the thing is, there are a lot of good black comedians out there. So, yeah, I mean, says a lot. You know, I totally get what you mean. You know, there's a lot of people talk the talk. Don't necessarily walk the talk.
I mean, it's, you know, and it's difficult, and it's, you know, and I, you know, I'm conscious all the time. You know, it's, you have to think of, so, like, I'm booking guests for this show, and you have to think of, like, who's going to be good at it, which is a lot of people. And, you know, and then I want to balance everything up. And once you start balancing everything up, you sort of go, oh, God, you know, this is kind of, I haven't balanced that. And it's got to be about who's funny and who's ready as well to do it. But, you know, everyone can make that decision. And I think everyone can look into the heart of it. Kate was just saying there's all these white middle class people making this decision about what goes on TV, and they're scared. And I go, they can't be scared of Nathan. He's like he's the least scary. I mean, you're a big guy, like you're a tall guy. That's the only thing you're saying. But you can't be scared of you. You know, if you see your act, it's a lovely, inclusive, funny act. It's not a terrifying thing, you know. And I can see some black comedians who are also fantastic, who I can understand would scare white middle-class producers.
Oh, my.
And good. Oh. And they might not put them on, but, you know, hopefully fuck them and they'll get through anyway. But, yeah, you know what I'm saying, but it's...
I get what you mean, but...
Yeah.
It's the industry I've come to know.
I know. And it's, you know, it's so difficult, and you're aware that, you know, most comedians think they're great. Most comedians in their heart think they should be there, and not all comedians can be there, right? Yeah. So it can't, not all comedians can get that. But it is, and maybe TV, you know, maybe TV doesn't matter. Let's talk about, I was listening to your podcast today, which I loved. You had Jason Manford on in the last one, I think. Give us some good news podcast.
Yeah.
Which are you doing? So how are you doing these? Is this a weekly?
Yeah, well, it started podcast? Off daily when we were in lockdown and we had nothing to do. So it was a good outlet. And then as the world starts to kind of slowly crawl back to some sort of normality, we've gone to weekly now. And, basically the podcast is just something to distract us from all the doom and gloom that's going on at the moment. So, you know, we don't talk about coronavirus, corona free, Trump free, you know, racism, Black Lives Matter free, all that. It's just trying to bring positivity to people's lives, put a smile on their face, you know, someone that puts them in a good mood. Hence, give me some good news podcast.
Yeah, it's good. No, it's a lovely. It's a good idea, and pretty difficult to not talk about those subjects when that's all that's happening. So that's a good comedic exercise as well, because you're absolutely right. It's, you know, we're hearing a lot about those subjects.
Yeah, but well, certain the virus. We just end up talking about food most of the time. What have you baked this week? Or what have you had this week? You know, Nando's now doing collections. Oh, really? Great. Then, yeah, it's a lot of food talk. Because that's what we do, man. Yeah. You're not down, just eat and drink.
I think there's, you know, I think some comedians aren't going to get through this 6 or 7 month period. There will be a lot. I've gone back and forth with the drinking. I was drinking a lot of this. I hadn't drunk for ages. Then I was drinking a lot at the start. Then I thought, I'll knock that on the head. Yeah. And I did that for what felt like months, but was probably only 2 weeks. Time has taken on this very elastic property where it feels like it's. Do you find this? The weeks are going so fast, but it doesn't feel like that long. We've been in lockdown as well. Yeah. It feels like I've had 100 Thursdays since this started. But look, and it always feels like Thursday.
I don't even know what day of the week. It's just a blur now. It's like Sunday feels like any day, and Tuesday feels like any day. It's just the sun coming up and going down over and over and over again, and there's no labels to it. It's just another day stuck in the house listening to my girlfriend talk about who knows what now.
Oh man,
drinking rum punch. I made rum cake the other day. I never made rum cake before, but I thought I
rum cake.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a cake, but it has to have alcohol in it.
Give that a go.
Has a rum punch.
I've been doing a bit of cooking as well. I made a loaf of bread. I made something very exciting that I can't talk to people about yet on this. They'll see when it comes up, they'll find out about it. Is the Radio 4 series show, is that done and dusted, or is there any chance that might No. You did a few series of that show, right?
Yeah, I did three series, and then White Middle Class England thought, okay, that's enough.
It's good, though, to get three series on Radio 4.
Oh, no.
I think Radio 4 is kind of... it's sort of definitely led the charge for female comedians, I think, Radio 4. Like, it feels like they've really gone to represent female comedians in the panel shows. They were way ahead of that. But, yeah, getting three series on Radio 4 is nothing to be sniffed at. It's like stand-up and sitcom about your life sort of thing, really.
Yeah, it will. Yeah. It's based on me turning down architecture to be a comedian.
Yeah.
And my family reacted to it and stuff, you know, living at home. The three series, it was great. Because when I first started doing stand-up, I never thought, like, I would be on Radio 4. You know, I'm not exactly the demographic for Radio 4. I remember when the first writing job that I did on Radio 4 was writing for News Quiz when Sandy Toksvig was the host. And I wrote a joke or some line. And afterwards, the producer came up to me and said, Nathan, this is very funny, but just FYI, Sandy doesn't use vocabulary like yo. sorry. My voice. Let's take it out to hi. So the fact that Radio 4 trusted me with this, it's great, you know, and I got a lot of work out of it from doing other bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And I'm now using the premise of that sitcom, I'm now using for a TV development that I'm doing, which is
great.
My life again, but advanced. So now I've got my girlfriend involved now and her family and stuff. And it's more like coming of age. So I'm working on that.
Cool, man.
So yeah.
That sounds good. It seems to me, I know you did the Paramount, like a pilot for Paramount, right, of the Nathan Kate and Joe.
Yeah. That was a car crash. Oh, gosh.
Was it?
That's bad memories, Richard.
I've got to go to the bat. I told Michael Palin, I reminded Michael Palin about a film he was cut out of. So I've got to do some, filling you apart.
No, that was, I mean, it was, at the time it was cool and it was a good bit of exposure, but that was, that was too soon. I was only like 21, 22 at the time. I was like,
oh, right. It was that long ago.
I look back on it now. I'm like, mate, you know what I mean? You look back on some jokes and like, fuck, I said that.
Yeah, for sure.
Jeez. Yeah. Well, imagine having that on TV. It was.
But then that's interesting because, I mean, because you've already done like 15 years of stand-up. And I felt this even with, Stuart and me, when we go being about 5 years and we got a TV series, 5 years in. And, in hindsight, I'm glad it wasn't longer, but if it would have been just because I'd have had to spend more time with him. But if it had been better for us, you'd have appreciated it more. I think like when you're young, if you're 21 and someone gives you a TV show, you kind of think, oh, this is what's meant to happen. This is normal. Yeah. And you don't like appreciate what an amazing opportunity that is, and it can work or it can't work. That's you can do something good and no one sees it and no one notices it, or you can do something bad and everyone notices and that's bad. So it's, it's interesting. It's interesting that you've, because there's so many comedians, you go, oh, they're a fairly, I'd look at you, Nathan's quite a new comedian, and you go, no, he's not. So you won the 2005 Chortle Student Award, so you've been going for 15 years.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's quite depressing.
That's what I'm here for. I'm here to make you feel bad. I finished my beer.
Yeah, well, I'm drinking brandy straight out of the bottle now.
That's good. Oh, that's nice. Well, that's a good choice. Look, it's all going. And we've done Live at the Apollo twice, haven't you? And you've done, and that, those sets are well worth looking out. There's a great routine about texting a picture of your bum to your church group, which not many comedians are going to be able to steal that one.
Oh gosh,
that's again, a good bit. It's a great routine.
I'm trying to forget. You keep bringing them back up.
People should check it out. I'm giving people at home a chance. Google and check out. Oh, let's talk about it. You're on Mastermind. How did you do on Mastermind? We on Mastermind.
Okay. It was a tale of two halves.
Right. Okay.
So my chosen subject was the Premier League.
Okay.
Smash that.
Yeah.
12 out of 12. All right. Then came to general knowledge. Turns out I watch too much Sky Sports and not enough of everything else. Yeah, I got maybe, I don't know, 5.
But that's okay.
No, it's not. It was bad. I went into second round confident because I was in the lead. Nailed this. Yes. My university degree is going to come in handy. And nah, mate. No. I finished third.
Third. Well, I was second, but I did really well, but I was second. I'm very annoyed about it. My general knowledge is good.
What was your chosen subject?
I did Rasputin, which I knew a little bit about, but I worked very hard on it. Okay. It wasn't something I had to learn all this stuff in phonetically because I can't speak Russian. So it was. I may have mentioned it on this podcast before. It may have come up before. Have you done any other? Because that's the only outlet I have on TV now is to appear on TV quiz shows. That's the only thing they let me do now, which I'm cool with. I have to say,
that's okay.
Fine. But, Have you done Pointless? You haven't done Pointless yet?
No, I haven't done Pointless. Haven't done Trade.
You'd be great on House of... You've got to do House of Games, man. Have you done House of Games?
No.
You'd be good at House of Games.
Really?
And they would like you on House of Games. I'm going to direct message Richard Osman straight after this and tell him to put you on House of Games.
He might not because he's a Fulham fan. I thought Brentford might be a bit of rivalry there.
That's okay. I think he can overcome it.
I'm waiting to do question of sport. If they have a celebrity question of sport, mate, I'm there.
Right.
I know a lot about sports. I just don't know anything else.
Right. Well, it's good to, you know, I'm not that interested in sport. This hasn't been a difficult time for me in terms of there being no sport.
Oh, yeah.
I support York City. This will be a good trivia question for you.
Okay.
York City, I think, might be the only team who've finished top of their league and not got promoted unless they win in the playoffs. York City are in the National Conference North. Okay. They finished the season top of the league division, but they're now in the playoffs for the second place. So they don't get promoted automatically despite being first. And there's every chance. I mean, it's very unlikely they won't fuck it up because it's York City. So don't York City yawn. Someone's just said in the chat room, fuck you. There's every chance. So that's a great trivia question. They'll go, you know, which team came top of their league and didn't get promoted?
Note to self. Noted.
Yeah, keep that in your head. Hey, look, man, it's been really, really lovely to talk to you. And I obviously wish you the best of luck. I'm your biggest fan. I'm going to make sure that Richard Osman puts you on House of Games.
Cool.
That's probably as much as I can do.
Mate, you know what? That's more than certain people have done for me in the last few years. I appreciate that, man. I said, mate.
Because I can't get on TV. And, you know, who's going to start thinking about the white middle-aged men? That's when are they going to get... My life, my career matters as well. When's someone going to think about me?
White comedians matter. White comedians matter.
So, hey, look, it's been great. Are you, I mean, do you know there's your podcast you can promote? Is there anything else that's definitely happening?
Give me some good news that's out every week. I'll drop it.
It's great, man. It was really, really enjoyed it.
I do lots of like football quizzes and football like chat stuff on my Instagram live. And then, apart from that, I'm just drinking. So when the world reopens, I'll be back out at comedy clubs up and down the country.
Good. Well, I really hope, I mean, I can't see it, but I really hope we're back in the theatres and the clubs by the autumn. I think we'll all be back in our houses by September, to be fair. I think we'll get like 3 weeks out and then everyone will go, oh, shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's still a virus. Just staying indoors for a while doesn't stop it. It's been great talking to you, mate. And, check out Nathan Caton on Twitter. And there's some great stuff on there, including that brilliant video that I mentioned. Thanks for doing it. And see you again soon, I hope, mate.
Take care, man.
Have a good lockdown. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Nathan Caton.
Thank you,
guys. We'll be back next week with Daniel Sloss. And we'll see you then. Thank you very much. Like and subscribe on Twitch if you enjoy this. Goodbye. You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Nathan Caton. Thank you very much to Pest for providing the music, even in lockdown. They don't care. They saw it coming, didn't they? That's why they called themselves Pest. Thank you very much to everyone at Twitch, everyone at Acast, everyone on the British Comedy Guide, and especially to Chris Evans, not that one or that one, for all his invaluable assistance in creating this streamed podcast. I'm indebted to Chris Evans, not that one. I'm indebted to Ben Walker, not that one either. Oh no, it is that one. Also, the executive producer this week was E.R. Auld. We called him E.R. Auld, which might be how he actually pronounces it, or she pronounces it. We called him J.R. Hartley, or her. We called him J.R. Ewan. We called her J.R. Ewan. We called them E.E. Cummings. We had lots of nicknames for E.R. Auld, but thank you for executive producing. It was a fantastic job. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Good riddance to you, my fan friends. Go to GoFasterStripe.com/badges, become a monthly badger, and get all kinds of lovely benefits. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.